Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tone Arrows podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined as always by my good friend, Tim Miller.
Hi, everyone.
Our guest today came down on a horrible wet day in Cork City, Mary Berry. You're from Wexford.
I am.
And you lost a son through addiction and you wrote a book about it.
I did.
And we have a couple of copies to give away as well.
You have indeed, yeah.
How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you. I had a rough journey down now to get to you. But first of all, can I just say thank you for having me on your podcast. I did see a show of yours in the Opera House.
I met you.
I met you, yeah. I met both of you. I had my photograph taken. And I was just, I was blown away. You know, I found it so emotional. You know, I was just glued to you both and your stories and all. And I've been looking at podcasts ever since and following your own stories.
Do you know, it's very important as well for people that are caught up in addiction to hear the mother's story and how she feels when they're actually watching your son slowly kill himself.
Yeah.
Or your daughter. Yeah. And that's what it is, because you genuinely don't know when the last time you're going to see them alive is when they walk out the door, and it's very important. But just to go back a small bit, Mary, can you just give us a little bit around yourself and who you are and where you came from, and then we'll get into Martin's story with yourself.
Okay. I'm the eldest of 10. I had a very happy childhood. My parents were great, Danny and Anne. We never had any problems, with... drugs or drink or anything like that. My dad was he never smoked, he never drank. My mom, she smoked. That was it. So we had a really happy childhood growing up, so I got pregnant then when I was 17 with Martin. Mm. I was 18 in October and I had him in November. Mm. So, I wasn't married.
Yeah.
I was with his father, all right. And I still lived at home. So, if I'm allowed to say now that his father was not a very good man. Mm. And back then, lads, I'm looking back at nearly 40 years ago now, Martin will be 41 now, So I suppose when I got pregnant, my father didn't want me to marry this particular man, but I just felt I had to, I would have been very vulnerable back then myself.
What year are we talking about?
1982. This would have been 1982.
My mother had my brother Keith at 17, 1981. So similar circumstances.
Yeah.
I was born in 1981 too.
They are.
And similar situation to you and your family as well.
So I did. I married him in 1984. And it was a sort of a bit of a violent relationship, but I didn't stay with him long. I left him after 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I had another partner who was very good to Martin.
How many kids did you go on to have?
I just have another son, Patrick. Oh, Patrick. Yeah. Patrick is actually 33 now next week, the same age as Martin was when he died, And Martin would have left behind two daughters. Ashley is 17 and Sophie is 11. Now, we had them both from two different women, but they were very good to Martin, He gave him a bit of hardship now a lot of times. But they always stood by him, and I'd be very close to both of them.
Mm. Fair play to you for saying that.
Oh, yeah. They are now. I mean, and look, they gave him loads of chances. I actually used to tell him, because I say, look, the next time, ring the guards. Yeah. Just ring the guards on. if he's tormenting you, I used to go mad, like, you know, because these weren't two nice girls, you know what I mean? So, and then, yeah, look at Mark. So
when did actually all start, Mary? When did Martin kind of start showing signs that there could have been issues around?
For me, Timmy, now, it was in his 20s,
yeah.
You know. Now, look, it could have been sooner. But for me, I think it was around then,
Was he drinking at this stage?
Oh, he liked his drink, lad, and he liked his gambling.
Yeah.
He was so funny as well, you know. We were very alike in a lot of ways because I can be very vulnerable myself now, you know. But, oh, God, I could tell you now. I just tell you one story. He'd run into me, you know. Now, he lived out on his own this time. You know, he was out in a flat. He'd run in. Ma, put your house on this horse. This is a cert that's going to win, you know. I said, son, I don't even own my house, like, you know. And if I did, I wouldn't be putting it on a horse. Yeah. I'm telling you now. But, you know, he firmly believed that horse was going to win. And he'd put whatever he had on it. And then it'd lose. Ma, I've no rent money now. So I'd have to pay his rent for him, you know. And, like, I'm not a wealthy woman or anything, you know. But he was so vulnerable, you know. I remember once he got a message on his phone and it had said that he was after winning money. A scam, like. The same thing ran down to me. Ma, I'm after winning €10,000, you know, or pounds it would have been. I said, son, that's only a scam. I said, they're only now. They'll ask you now for your bank details soon. They won't, man, they won't. No point in arguing with him because he just never really listened.
Yeah.
He done the same. He went up and told me dad, you know, of course my dad was, all right. So I just said, all right, Martin, sure, if you get it, then you can give me a few bob. Yeah. I will, ma, I will. The next day come down. I allowed swear on this.
Of course we are.
Grand. And he goes, Matt, you were fucking right. They asked me for my bank details. He didn't even have a bank account. Thank God.
Yeah.
So I said, son, I told you that. Like, they were only trying to get money off you. Fuck's sake, he goes, you know. Yeah. So that's the type of person he was.
He was innocent in his own way. Like.
He really was, lad, you know. And he'd folly stones. You know, he was very vulnerable. And I always worried about him, you know.
Where was he in school?
Oh, he didn't like school, lads. He left school when he was about 15. Now, I tried to get him, and I said, son, look, we'll get you an apprenticeship, maybe a block layer or, you know, so you'll have a trade. No, man, no, he'd say, I'm too stupid. It was always this. I'd be too stupid. I said, son, you learn. You have to learn these things. No one is just born a bricklayer or, you know.
Yeah.
No. But he eventually did get a job with my sister's husband, my brother-in-law, and he a labourer. And he was kilt, like, but he loved it. He loved it and he was happy with that, you know. So he
good
was,
for his self-esteem to be out working
was,
like that.
It was, lads.
And build his confidence, you know.
It really was, lads. He was, you know. Now, he did that for a while and he eventually got a job on a bin lorry.
Yeah.
Lads, he loved that job. He really loved it, you know. And sure, then he was drunk coming home and in a car one day, lads. You know, he was going home from work and he crashed and he lost his license. So he lost his job, you know. So that was a sign there.
Like, did he notice? Like, was there issues with addiction at this stage? Like, did you notice? Like, if he's drinking drugs?
Do you know something, lads? For me, right? I remember I watched Trainspotting.
Yeah.
Remember that film?
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I was going, you know, I couldn't believe the film. Yeah. You know, and you know, like for me, you know, for me to say that my son was an addict. Now, I know there's certain words I don't like. I don't like the word scumbag. I don't like the word junkie. And I will always say this wherever I've done a couple of small talks now.
Yeah.
Nothing like yous now. But I hate those words, you know. And I remember actually when Martin died, his my ex-husband's mother, she was a Kerry woman, she rang me, you know. Now, they didn't really have anything to do with Martin. I didn't know Martin was a heroin addict. Well, lads, if she had been in the room with me now, I probably would have bursted her.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe what she said to me, you know. And I said, he wasn't. You know, he wasn't. I just hung up on her, you know.
Yeah.
But like he had died from taking heroin and probably other things.
How did he escalate in his drug and alcohol use?
He would have always drank, lads. He liked his cans.
Yeah.
And he never really wanted much in his life, lads. You know, he had his little flat, just ordinary little old small telly. No big flat screen. Would never have been wanting anything like that. As long as he had his few cans.
Modest man.
Really was. Now, the only thing he loved was runners. He could have spent his rent money on, man, look at me runners. Much were they, son? €200. Do you pay your rent? No. Do you get any shopping? No.
he hadn't got the life skills at all.
He really hadn't, you know. He really had me heartbroken. he was so funny, you know, but and he loved sport. He was in North End Soccer Club. It's a big club in Wexford, and he was a very good goalkeeper in hurling.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He really, and I tell you, I never forget, he was in the Wexford Park, they were at a match, and Damien Fitzhenry would have been the goalkeeper then. Don't know if you ever heard of Damien. And anyway, at halftime or something, you know, Martin went out and he got Damien to take a shot on him and he saved it. My God, the whole town heard about that. Oh, yeah. He was delighted, you know. So that was his one big, you know, step to fame. But
which, you know, when he's having a drink and he's having a gamble, but when did you start looking at it and think this is becoming problematic?
When I used to go up and clean his flat for him, you know, because I love cleaning. That's my thing. And I'd find tablets and all around. Now, I would never have found needles or anything, but I would find tablets, you know. And, you know, I'd say to him, like, what are these? And he'd probably said they're painkillers and stuff. No, I probably believed him in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I probably did. But it was when I found out who he was going around with. Yeah. You see, he had befriended a couple of chaps, boys, like, in town who I knew were on drugs. Mm. One of them was a drug dealer. And so I sort of had many arguments with him, you know, to stay away from these people.
Does it say, and they'll show me your company and I'll show you the man?
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he always used to say to me, and I'd never take drugs. I swear I'd never. I said, all right, son. So, you know, I'd have the odd argument with him and he kept going around with him. And I suppose he'd gradually start getting that bit worse. But he never, like, there was times I'd see him, you know, he'd always come to me for his dinner now and he might be looking pale and losing a bit of weight. Sure, he wouldn't be cooking or nothing, like, you know. And, you know, I'd say, my son Patrick would say, Mom, I think he's on something, you know. Patrick now is the total opposite to Martin. Yeah.
Did they get along?
They did. Yeah, there were 7 years between them, you know. But Patrick tried to look out for him. Patrick is big into his keep fish, loves his weightlifting and all. He's a different type of person to Martin, you know. So I suppose it's sort of, it was going from there, lad, you know, and he had different flats then. And I used to have to get him the flats, lads. Like, Martin wouldn't be able to go on and talk to a landlord. So I had to sort of make him out to, you know,
fill out the application.
I did, you know. And as I must say, the flats that day were given out to people back then, you wouldn't put a dog in them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I said that to many of them, hon, I wouldn't put my dog living in this. Yeah. You're disgraceful expecting people to live in them, you know. But anyway.
During the town you're from, what's it like? Is it a rough town? Is there a lot of drugs? Is it a nice town?
But Wexford.
Like Wexford town.
Loughgarman. Yeah. Or Yellowbellies, you probably know us, you know. Now, that's not because we're cowards.
Yeah.
Right?
Where did that come from?
It came from, it was in the 17th century. A Wexford team went to Cornwall to play a match, hurling match. And they wore yellow sashes around. And I can't remember now who was the king or queen back then. But they won the match and she shouted, "Go on, Yellowbellies." And that's where we got the Yellowbellies from, you know. Yeah. So Wexford is a lovely town, lads, you know. Like when I was growing up and all, it was lovely. Wasn't really rough. I mean, I think I would have known two fellas in town that I knew were on drugs.
Yeah.
That would have been it for me, like, you know. And yet I knew them and, like, they were lovely fellas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I used to, how are you getting on and all?
Yeah.
I knew what they used to do, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different now, lads. Drugs are rampant. I mean, they really are. They're everywhere now. And I even see that in Wexford, you know. There's a lot of drugs around, lads. Really a lot of drugs.
Well, why do you think that more people in Wexford are looking to use drugs? Where's the quality of life up there? And is there jobs? Is there housing? I know there's housing, huge housing issues in Cork.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it similar?
It would be similar, you know. And to be honest with you, lads, you know, you have young fellas that are on the dole. You know, they're getting their money. They don't want to work, like. You know, they really don't. And, you know, I've often watched them going around, you know, and, you know, they're dressed to the best, like. You know that they're, I don't know what the word is now, runners, is it?
Yeah.
They'd be running for drug dealers with the drugs and that. And that's the way they're dressed. And I suppose, you know, it's such a big attraction to him, I suppose, yeah. You know, to be going around all the gear on him. And I mean, if you walk downtown now on the Monday is Dole Day in Wexford, and I mean, you will see him all. Yeah. You know, you will see him on corners. You will see him collect the money off people because they look, they just blatantly do it.
Because some people, you know? Some people might look at, some people that mightn't be aware or educated can look at a situation and think that wouldn't happen to my son or that wouldn't happen to my daughter. You could be the best parent in the world. But like when they go outside the door, they're independent adults in the end of the day. With all this temptation in front of them.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do as a parent.
No, there really isn't, lads. And, you know, for years, Martin's dead 7 years now, 30th of August. And, you know, when you're a mother, lads, or a father, like the father wasn't in his life, like, you know, you always blame yourself. I mean, I will always partly blame myself. And that's a mother, like, you know, that you couldn't protect him, that you couldn't sort of keep him away. But lads, when they grow up, they're adults themselves. Mm. How do you tell a 25-year-old man not to go around with these?
You can't, Mary. Like, no, you can't. Know? And you said something there, like, and you said something about blaming yourself. There is absolutely nothing that you could have done. So blaming yourself is something that would probably need to stop because sometimes these things just happen. But just I just want to ask you a question around maybe. When, at what point did your relationship with Martin start deteriorating because of his actions around drugs? You're watching your son slowly kill himself with what he's doing to himself.
Yeah.
You know, and that causes conflict. And the reason I'm saying that is because my own relationship, my mother would have deteriorated, and like sometimes family members have to just say, listen, enough is enough. I can't deal with this no more. You're going to have to find somewhere else to live. And it's not that you're a bad person or anything like that. Sometimes you just have to really protect yourself because your heart is literally broken and you cannot deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, what led up to say that relationship between yourself and him getting into a position like that?
I stuck it out for a long time, lads. Yeah. I really did. Mothers do. Yeah, I'm a very strong person. Mm. Also very emotional.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to the counselling. You know, I went to the family support group. I sat around the table with mostly mothers at the table. I think there was one father. And they will tell you, you know, that we cannot be enabling him, you know, and stuff. And that we really should maybe distance ourselves from him. Like, it was grand for... You know, if you have a counsellor, they're saying that, lads. But I couldn't do that. He was my son and I was not abandoning him. No way. I used to always say, if something happens to him now, I'm after throwing him out. I'll never be able to live with that. And that's the way I used to think. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether the rest
all
of
mothers
them,
think like that.
I just couldn't, you know. I really went to the last with him. I really did. And I remember one day sitting at home on the sofa and my sister called down. And I was shattered. I was just like bet. And I said, Melda, I said, I might go up to the psychiatric ward in Waterford for a while. Mm. I said, you know, I'm bet. I said, you know, but then at the same time, lads, I had two dogs.
Mm. Kind of dogs.
I had a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
I've told them to me of one as well.
Mm. Oh, have you?
Yeah.
My God, Sky, she was a bitch.
That's why I asked. Right. Something taught me that you were a Staffy. I don't know what it was.
They're my favorite. I love them.
Dog's name. You know?
I'm a Sky, a Staffy as well.
Oh, Jesus, son. And I had a little terrier, Judy. But they were actually like my daughters. I mean, my dad used to laugh at me when I'd say that. They were actually like my children. And I adored my staff. She actually was my best friend.
Affectionate, aren't they? And loyal. And
I wrote a beautiful poem about her, actually. And, you know, she was my best friend for the 16 years I had her.
She was a good age.
16. Sure, they were like two queens. Jesus, I used to mind them like babbies. But I love them. She was brilliant. And you know something, lads? I got great.
You what love is, don't they?
When I was down and all, the staff now than Judy, you know. But yeah, and even when I had lost a sister when she was 36, when she died from a brain tumour, you know, that was the first death in the family. Yeah. And like that killed us all. And, you know, I was just, the dog was just so great for me to have.
We called the two dogs in my house, we called them the ducklings. Because no matter where I am, there I am behind me, trotting up the stairs, down the stairs.
Into the toilet.
They wear out. Zeus is the boy. He'd lie on the shower mat outside the shower, wait for me to finish the shower.
Yes.
And then he'd wait outside the bedroom door, wait for me to come out. Or if, you know, he just waits for me and then he's on behind
very
me.
Same.
You know?
I was the very same. They slept with me and all, and I used to say, no wonder I can't get a man.
Or do you know if you're part of
two dogs in the bed with me?
Do you know if your partner in the room cleaning or cooking, and the next you just look over, his eyes, their eyes are always on you, aren't they?
Yeah, they're amazing now. And I really miss, I was devastated. I lost Martin, me dad and the two dogs in the matter of 2 years. So I had to, you know, my sister was before that.
That was tough.
So it was really tough, was lads. Tough. And the dogs was, I think I felt, this might be awful to say, but at the time I felt so bad that my dogs were also gone. Mm. You know, the three of them were like, you know.
You're devastated when your dog passes.
Devastated. Oh,
Jesus Christ, unbelievably.
Oh, like, the staff's all, like, you can't beat them.
It's the love. It's you can't explain it, can you?
You know.
It's just a different level of love coming from an animal,
and yeah,
they actually fucking they have a great place in this world,
yeah,
by what they do teaching human beings.
We're lucky to have them, like, conditioning.
Yeah, they do. Now, hopefully, before I die, I will get another staff. I was saying that before I get too old.
Do you know what? You probably should, Mary.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
I love it.
Should.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice for you.
It would be. Yeah, it's just I'm very busy at the minute.
Yeah.
I've been busy the last little while, you know, so I suppose that's the reason. And I'm up and down to Cork every second weekend because I'm actually I'm a little bit of a rebel because I'm going out with a Cork man.
I'm Paul.
Paul Buckley from Ballyvahan.
Fair play, Paul.
Yeah.
Very good.
So just to bring you back, Mary, we were just talking about, you know, when things started to go on getting bad.
Yeah.
And you were saying, like, the one thing you could never do was trauma or abandon him. And that's so true for a mother. It is. But there's also a time that you have to mind yourself because your heart is absolutely broken. And like you said there, like when you speak of your sister, that you wanted to go into a psychiatric ward because of the pain you were in watching Mark.
Your mental health. Do you know? Well, yeah.
Can you continue on from that?
Yeah, yeah. And I did say that to her, you know, and strangely enough, I thought of me two dogs. How will I go in? Who will mind me dogs? Yeah. And that's exactly why I never did anything about it. Mm. I said, I really wouldn't have had anyone to mind the dogs. So I said, oh God, the dogs would die without me. So I sort of soldiered on, you know. I soldiered on and... Martin, will I move on to, he first overdosed around 2015.
Yeah.
Now he had, like, he was going around with these fellas, you know, and I used to follow him as lads at night. You know, someone might ring me, this could be 2 o'clock in the morning, and say, look, Mary Martin is down, maybe outside one of the pubs, and he's with this fella and that fella. And I get up out of bed, lads, and I go down looking for, could be lashing rain because I don't drive. And I go down looking for him, and then he'd have a big argument then if you saw me, and following him, of course, you know. But people used to do that because I'd be very well known in Wexford and my family are very well known. You know, Martin was well known. So I was really, kilt, like, you know. So there was a lot of times like that now. So he was down in a person's house then. I suppose there was two or three of them there. Down there one night. And he had taken drugs, like, and they went up to bed. Martin was sleeping on the sofa. So, of course, he, whatever he had taken, like, he overdosed and he fell on the floor. Now, they didn't find him till the next morning. So when they came down, like, you know, he was nearly dead.
Yeah.
And he was lying over on his side. So his arm swelled up. There's a word on it now. It's a medical word. And his leg. So they got the ambulance and they brought him onto the hospital. So someone contacted me then, you know, and
was that phone call when they contacted you? Was that something that you were already waiting for?
Do you know something strange enough when you say that, lads? I never thought Martin would die from drugs. No, that might sound so stupid.
But were you ever waiting on the phone call, like, to say that there was something after happening to him?
I was, as it was going forward, you know. Yeah. I was, you know what I mean? But I think my family were more waiting for that than me. I always thought that he was going to be okay. You know, I used to say, oh, he'll be okay. I tried to calm myself. And then on the other hand, I'd say, oh, Jesus, like, you know, he's on drugs now. He's going to die. Like, So anyway, I got to the hospital. And yet, even going to the hospital, I was thinking, he's after been fighting now. It's after getting, someone's after beating the crap out of him now.
Yeah.
I never said to myself, he's after overdosing now.
It's denial, isn't it?
I really didn't. So when I got up there anyway, Jesus, the doctors were running around and a doctor came in to me then and he said to me, you know, he's after overdosing, you know, and I goes, overdosing on what? And he goes, drugs. Are you sure? I said, are you sure? This little small, you know, Pakistani doctor. And I was going, oh, he must be, you know, And so anyway, look, he had, and he was very bad. Like he even said, look, if you have any relations or family away, I'd advise you to get him home. He said, you know, all his organs were shut down. They had to slit the arm, you know, right down because he'd nerve damage then and they slit the leg. But the doctor did say to me, I never forgot it. He said, this looks like the first time Martin has actually used heroin. He said, because all his organs are after shutting down, you know. And I never forgot that he said that to me, you know. So he was in hospital last for about 2 months. Like he was in Wexford for a while.
Any brain damage?
I'll tell you now, right? He was in Wexford for about maybe 2 months, right? Then there was no more that they could do from him. Now they had him in a coma. So he was in a coma for two months? Yeah. There was no, you know, he was in that. So they sent him then to Waterford to try and get his kidneys and all started. And they said to me, now we said, when we bring Martin round, he could have brain damage. Here I was then, oh God, yeah, I look after him now. Sure, I get the council to build me a room for him. And I was going through all this scenario, you know. And then someone, that's a nurse, said, Mary, you'll never be able to look after Martin on if he's not able to do anything.
Yeah.
I said, I will. I look after him. Anyway, that was the end of that.
And you will do?
Oh, you give me up. I said, I'd be grand. I'll look after him. Yeah. You know, I'll do all them things. Yeah.
Where was he when he woke up?
When he woke up, lads, I never forgot it. I was going down the corridor with I think it could have been my brother, and they were wheeling Martin up on a trolley. I mean, he looked hurt, like, you know, he looked like a dead person. And he saw me. Mom! I was going to myself, you fucker, you. Martin, you know, so he spoke. Like, and they brought him into the...
he recognised you, he was able to speak. They're all great signs for you.
So we went in anyway and, you know, the doctor said, look, he was left with a small bit of a brain damage, lads. Short-term memory loss, you know. So he was left with that.
It happened to a friend of mine. When you overdose from opiates, it's a respiratory overdose. So the breathing goes so shallow that sometimes it stops or it goes so shallow and not enough oxygen goes to the brain and the brain cells die off over time.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was there all night, haunted, we say in Cork, he's blessed that he was only had minimal damage to the brain.
He was there for about 16 hours.
I had another friend then, he'd an overdose and he was lying against the radiator in the bedroom and his whole back melted and he passed away from an overdose a few months later, but it just shows the power of that over. Martin lay down his arm all night in an awful condition and that didn't wake him.
Yeah.
And my friend melted against the rad basically and that didn't wake him. But that tell you how dangerous it is.
Yeah.
That's why they always say, especially with heroin users, don't use alone. Because if you go under, you need somebody to raise the alarm.
Yeah. You see, he was left there, lads. And I mean, I remember his arm was like a leg. I couldn't believe it was so big, you know. So they had told me then what they had to do with it and all.
Stuff over it or something?
Yeah, they slid it and he had an open wound. Had to have that dressed every day when he got out of hospital. And I used to have to bring him to the, to get that dressed. Every day I had to bring him up, a grown man, because I knew he wouldn't go up by
himself.
Did
he go back to your house?
He did. I became his carer. He came back to my house and he was great for a while.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, and then he started going out again. I used to go, oh, Jesus, you know, I used to follow him and have people looking out for him and stuff like that, you know. But then he eventually did get another flat, you know. Now when you look for a flat for me, I want to move out. No, I can't live with you anymore, you know. And I was minding him like a babby, like.
Well, he didn't have the freedoms, you see.
No, he did, because I'd be watching him, you see. And so eventually I got him another place anyway, and sure, he got that. And sure, look, what I knew those fellas going down to the place, sure. Like, they used to rob his clothes and all that, you know, because I'd always hear it. So he sort of went back to that. And I remember there was, I think he owed a drug dealer 40 euro one day. And your man was a bit of a hard chaw now, you know. And someone ran down to me, Mary, there's a fella up in Martin. He only lived up around the corner, you see. There's a fella up the road and he's in Martin's and he's, you know, he's hitting him. Of course, I ran up. He ran up the road, you know. You're just so full of adrenaline, you know. Is, I mean, yeah, he could have killed me, like, but you don't be thinking. So I ran in anyway, you know, what are you doing here? What are you doing with him? He owes me 40. I said, I'll give you the money. Come on. So he came out with me and he waited on the corner and I ran down and gave him the money.
Smelly 40 euro.
40 euro. Thank God it wasn't 4,000, lads, because I had it.
I know.
He wouldn't have had it. But, excuse me. But that was it. He never really owed anyone else any money, you know.
Yeah.
But they really used him, you know, and, look what he just pottered along. He, you know, do you know some lads? I think he liked his drink more than drugs, you know, even though drugs killed him, like, yeah, you know.
Because do you know what I think? You know what I think? Why? After a while, the drugs don't really have that much of an effect on you. You're just using this so you're able to function on your daily business.
Yeah.
You know, but you're not really getting high because your tolerance is so high.
Yeah.
He said, but you always get drunk. Like, if you drink a bottle of vodka, it doesn't matter if you're drinking vodka every day, you're still going to get langers. Like,
maybe.
And I think the buzz comes from the drink. For in my situation, when I was on heroin as well, after the while, heroin does nothing for you. But it wasn't really drinking me. I used to top up with tablets and Valium and Xanax and stuff like that. You'd be stoned from that stuff then. But after a while, the heroin, it doesn't do nothing for you.
Yeah.
And then you're drinking, you put stuff down on top of it, the risk of overdose goes through the roof then.
So how long, Mary, after that overdose?
After that, he actually, he said he'd go into rehab. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. Into Cumwira.
Yeah.
The country.
A tie.
Yeah. I thought then, lads, you just ring up a rehab and they bring him in straight away.
I wish.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. They were telling me that he has to be free of drugs for so long and, you know.
Cumwira is one of these you ones to get into.
Sorry?
Cumwira is one of the easier ones to get into.
Yeah. I brought him to Francis's farm.
That's
first.
Where I was as well.
Sure, he gave the person in their hip of abuse. I was sitting outside waiting for him and the girl just said, we probably wouldn't take Martin out at the moment, you know. I said, why? He said, because he's after being very abusive to us, you know. Yeah. I goes, did no one else ever be abusive to you? You know, he was really mad. Like,
yeah.
But that was it. They weren't taking him. That was it. I tried Cumwira.
Pity.
Yeah. Oh, it was like, and then it was because he had a little bit of the memory thing, you know. So I tried other places as well and they wouldn't take him. I went to Cumwira then and I went in and anyway, spoke to the girl and they were sort of hemming and hamming a bit, you know, saying that he'd have to be off the drugs and all, have to come up and be tested. And then they were going on about the, you know, and I said, listen, and I said, you're my last chance here. I said, I've nowhere else to go now if you don't take Martin. I said, you know, so they took him. You know, they said they would take him. Now, he found that terrible difficult, lads.
It's difficult, yeah.
I mean, I went up on a family day and I went in anyway. And all these big hard jaws, you know, like big, I don't know, hard, you know, hard jaws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
like Timmy.
Fellas, like you, Timmy. The very same build as you. But, you know, there were Dublin fellas and there was Cork fellas. And I was going, oh, my God, he's really going to find this very difficult. Mm. And he did. He found it really difficult. Always wanted to come home. And I said, Martin, you have to try and stay for a little bit longer. Mm. Now, I think he said for 5 weeks, which was amazing. Yeah. I couldn't believe
it. He had a bit of respite, hadn't
he? You know, he did.
How long is their programme up there?
Oh, God.
12 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I was hoping he would have stayed longer, lad, you know, but I remember coming home in someone's car with him. Oh, man, I can't wait to go out and get drunk.
Oh,
I was going, oh, my God, you know. But I was just thinking when you asked me that, he did go into ward for psychiatric one time, right? And he went there for a little while, right? And he loved it there. Should you know what he used to do in the evening? Martin used to go to the supermarket and bring back bottles of vodka.
Mm.
And used to be drunk up there. Now, this is a great place, he said. I might stay here for a while. Then I found out what was going on. I said, you may come out of there now, son, that's it, you know. And that's what he was doing back then, mm-hmm. up there. So he came out of there anyway. And did he come back and live with me maybe for a small while? And then I think he might have owed someone a few bob. He seemed to be a bit nervous, you know, but he never said. So this went on for a little while anyway. And then we started arguing again, you know, and stuff. And I was, you know, I was finding it very tough back then. So I asked my dad. No, my dad was a great man, lads. Oh, my God. He was the greatest man I've ever
met.
Danny Beery. He was powerful now. A brilliant family man. He said he'd let him move in. Now, my brother lived with my dad, and my parents had divorced by then. So Martin was delighted, and he loved up there, loved him, my dad's. And my brother Danny used to keep an eye on him because Martin was afraid of Danny. You know, he'd do what Danny would tell him.
Yeah.
You know. So one night came then anyway. My brother was doing night shift, and my dad was gone out probably to mass. My dad was a very religious person. And Sir Martin went off down back to the house to these two or three chaps. He went down there anyway. And my dad rang me later on. Said, Mary Martin is not home yet. I think it was about 10:30 or 11. And he goes, hey, I wonder where he is. So I rang Martin. Where are you, son? I'm down fishing on the bridge, ma'am.
Drink palm arse,
you know what I mean? And now they were fishing. They were fishing at that time. And I was going, I wouldn't. You know, I said, Aria, I said, who are you with? And your name, fellas. And I was going, no way is he now fishing, like, you know. And he got a fishing rod. So anyway, I just said, listen, you go straight home to Grandad's now. I said, because he's waiting up for you, you know. And I'd kill you now if you don't go home. All right, ma'am. He goes, all right. So that was grand. Now, I never heard any more till about 5:30 in the morning. My dad rang me. Mary, I can't wake Martin up. Right? So, I said, all right, Dad, I'd be straight up. He lives maybe 15 minutes up from me. So when I got up there, no, he was after ringing the ambulance. Now, my dad was there on his own because my brother wasn't home yet. So I ran up the stairs anyway. And my dad, now, we had checked him during the night. He would always check him. He looked in on him. And Martin was just lying there. My dad thought he was asleep. Now, he could have been dead at that stage.
Yeah.
But when he went back into the room, then at that time he was in the very same position. So he went over and shook him. And did Martin fall out of the bed? You know, yeah. I'm sure my dad couldn't lift him up. He was a very big chap, like.
Yeah.
And so I came up anyway with a friend of mine. And, you know, we went in anyway. And, you know, he was lying on the floor, like, in his underpants, like. And I was shaking him and all. And my dad said, I'm after ringing the ambulance. So, of course, I went down on the phone and I was eating the person on the fire. You know the way you'd be,
yeah.
Where's the ambulance? I said, Sonny, you're running like over around the corner.
Yeah.
No sign of the ambulance. Telling me what to do and all. So my friend was upstairs and he was doing CPR on him. you know, and I kept shouting up, you know, is he, Donald was his name, is he awake yet, Donald? And he choked down, no, not yet, Mary. I was there anyway. Is the ambulance, where's the ambulance on? I said, so we were doing that interaction, you know, I was shouting up, is he awake yet? No. So I never thought he was going to die, but he was probably already dead. And my dad was up there as well. And so anyway, the ambulance came to retrieve him, ran in, ran up the stairs. And my dad wouldn't let me go into the room because they were going to be doing the CPR on him. Now, I don't know what that's like, lad. Some people say they nearly break their ribs and all.
Did they, yeah.
So he said, Mary, you wait out there now, please.
Yeah.
So I did. And I went back downstairs. I was sitting on the end of the stairs because my sisters and all were starting to come over then. You know, someone had rang him and that. And I knew one of the ambulance men and he came down first. I went to school and I said, Liam, is he all right? He said, Mary, he's gone on. You know, and it was very tough. You know, when I think about it now, you know, and I don't really go up to my dad's house very much now. Yeah. You know, my dad is gone anyway as well. But when I used to go up into the room, I could still see him lying on the floor. So, and then everything happened so quick after that, lads. I had people from the funeral parlour up with me about an hour after. And they were asking me about hymns and all. And I said, Anne, tell them not to be asking me them questions.
Yeah.
Like I was in a daze. For that first year, I would have been in a daze. But you know they were trying to do their job, but I was saying to myself, if they don't fucking stop asking me hymns and all, you know, so they wanted to just get it all really sorted so they could take the body and all, you see.
Yeah.
And actually, lads, my son Patrick at that time, he worked for Senator Windus and he was on his way to Dublin in a van. I was already up on Facebook that Martin, rest in peace, Martin, Martin Beery used to call him, like, you know, he was originally in Morrissey, but everyone, rest in peace, Martin Beery. And Patrick saw this on his phone, you know, and he goes, so he rang me, but I hadn't got my phone.
He hadn't been notified yet.
He didn't know.
That's why people shouldn't be putting stuff up, do you know?
But it was on it. Martin had probably only died 20 minutes. So anyway, they pulled in the van and he rang, He rang his dad, you know, my two sons are both from two different partners.
Yeah.
But we remained very close.
Yeah.
But he rang his dad and he didn't. He rang my brother, Ger. Ger was very good to Martin. And he said, Ger, what's wrong? He said, you know, Patrick, or he said, Patrick, you know, you better come home. There's, you know, Martin is after passing. So of course, poor old Patrick had to come back home then. And,
That was tough.
That was tough. And you know something? I wasn't on Facebook back then, but I couldn't believe it. He was not long dead and they had it all over Facebook. No. People were actually ringing me a couple of hours after. You know, like I'd answer the phone and I'd give it to my sister. I'd be going, get on to them, man. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, they were so stupid. That's stupidity, like.
It's ignorance, isn't it?
Stupidity, like, you know?
But you know the way down through the years, from listening to you, you know, don't you realize if this comes across like you're very solution focused. If there's an issue with Martin, you're like in fixer mode, you're going to fix it, you're going to help him no matter what it is. Let's look at how we can improve the situation.
Yeah.
And even when he was overdosed on the ground, you're on the ambulance, you're trying to, what's it like then when they just tell you he's passed and then that's stopped dead in your tracks? There's no more solutions. And like how do you process
it's
that?
It's funny how you said that, Timmy. Because I am a fixer, lads. I tries to fix.
You're going.
I tries to fix everyone's problems. I've always been like that. People will tell you that about me. And I helps everyone. I really do. I tries to help everyone. Doesn't matter who they are, you know. And I've always been like that. So, I don't, lads, you know something. It was.
Do you know that fixer in you?
Sorry?
Do you know the fixer in you?
Yeah.
To fix everybody. What about you?
Do you know something? I used to say to myself, Mary, you can fix everyone's problems, but you can't fix your own.
No, but what about yourself? Do you look after yourself?
Fixing myself.
Not saying there's anything broke to fix, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you give yourself any time for yourself? Do you mind yourself? Like
I do try to, lads. I mean, I don't smoke. I'm not a drinker. I was always big into martial arts. Mm. I was actually in a black belt in Taekwondo.
Go away.
I was on the Irish team. That was my sport growing up. I went on to teach Keep Fit classes. But I ended up having to get two hip replacements. So I sort of, Martin died then and I never went back to it because I wanted to look after my hips, lads, you know, because I mean, if you get 15 year out of them, you're doing well. Now, I do try to keep fit, but I sort of, I lost the zest to do that, you know. But I've recently just gone back to do a bit of training with a friend of mine who has a gym, you know, because, you know, the weight starts coming on after 50. So I said, after after 40,
after
Timmy.
After 40.
So I've always done that. And that was my, I used to love it. I loved martial arts and I was pretty good, you know.
Did you go any counselling for your, to help you with your grieving process?
I went to bereavement counselling. All lovely lads, you know, and you know, it was grand, lads, you know. It was very difficult because you're like, people would have lost people in their family and that, but none of them had lost a child, you know. And it was very difficult for me to sit there and, you know, like, I don't know, it was, but I kept going to it and I made lovely friends, and that's where my book came out of, lads. You see, I was so angry back then, lads. I mean, I had many a row with the guards. I actually, the morning after Martin died, I went straight down to that house and I told the guard, because the guards were in my house as well, when someone dies sudden, I said, I'm going down there now and I'm going to actually kill him. I went off down that road on my own and I pounded on the windows, but there was no one there, you see. And I said to the guard, I said, did you just go down and check? Because he's a drug dealer, I said. I think it was about 6 hours after they went to the house. I said, sure, he'd be after flushing them down the toilet then. I gave the guards a tough old time. But a lot of them know me, you know, and they were grand, like, you know. And so...
How did the idea for the book come about?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was on. Sorry, I veers off the subject sometimes, lads. When I was in the bereavement counselling, I was so full of anger, hate, grief. So I used to write these little poems and throw them under the bed. You know, I'd be cracking up. I used to have a baseball bat in my bedroom. And I really wanted to go down so many nights and break the windows in the house. But I never did. I wasn't brought up to be like that. And I just said, you can't go down that road.
You're angry.
Mary. I was so angry.
You're angry and your pain for the last year's son coming out in anger.
So I wrote the poetry, lads, and I used to throw it under the bed. You know, just for myself, that was. So the idea of poetry came into the group, you know. Someone started mentioning poetry. They were wanting us to write little poems about feelings and stuff. And I said, well, I'm after writing a few poems. I said, I'll bring him in. You just can have a read of him. So I brought him in anyway and they all read him. I said, Mary, would you not do something with these poems? I mean, these are just telling your story. They thought they were brilliant for what I sort of went through. I said, oh, geez, lads. I said, like, my son died from a heroin overdose. So I'm going to be, even though a lot of people would have known, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have known. And I said, I don't know, I'll have to think about it. So anyway, I went to my dad, the house court to my dad, he was great. And he said, Mary, if you're wanting to do it, do it. He said, I'll pay for the books to be published. Because I didn't go to anyone, lads. I just, you see, I'm very impatient. I just went ahead and I got them books published. And I hadn't even got a penny. My poor dad paid, I think, £2,000. Would you not? No, I could have waited. And I'm sure people would have published that for me.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I have to get this done now. So I went and I got it done. And I had a book launch. Went great in the Wexford Library. I sold it in one or two of the bookshops in town. But after that, lads, I didn't really. I had great ideas of what I wanted to do with it. But it was very tough. And I just wasn't ready to do what I'm doing now. Yeah. I said, no, I'm not ready.
Say what I'm doing now, Mary. Tell us a little bit of what you're doing now.
I will. Only a few months ago, I was sitting there at home one day and I said to myself, I'm going to get my book republished now and I'm going to try and get it into schools, GA clubs, soccer clubs, addiction centres, prisons. I want to get my book. Now, I wasn't only going for Wexford. All over Ireland, I said, I want to get my book right. So I wrote an extra 8 poems and a short story at the back. I went to a man called Frank Staples. He runs the ASK campaign, deals with mental health and all. You see, I knew the mayor then and I knew a few of the councillors and I gave him a book and they read, oh, Mary, you should do this, definitely. Brilliant. So they were on board with me. They helped me with the book launch and all. You know, they opened it. I had a great book launch. But then it sort of, after that, and after a while, sorry, I'm gone past that. I'm relaunching the book.
Yeah.
Then I was ready to, I said, no, I'm on my journey.
Do you have to get out and market it, you see, get on podcasts and radios and stuff like that?
You see, I am so bad technically. I really am, the pits on my phone. You know, I really am, but I'm going to learn, you know. Mm. But I've been on the local radio and all, you know, I've been on. I've got my books into the 49 GA clubs in Wexford, right? I gave them 10 books each. Now, they're giving away free, lads, because what happened was the businesses in Wexford, I went to them, I told them what I was doing. And now I've been to maybe 5 or 6. Now, there's more I have to go to. Mm-hmm. Not one of them refused me. But you see, that's because they were probably afraid to refuse me because I would have went mad. You know, I would have known them, and if they had said, I'd have said, I don't, what? So they were all very good, and I still have more people that I have to go to, you know. Yeah. So the books, Timmy and James, have gone to the GA clubs. I'm at present sorting out the soccer clubs. Well, I mean, I've been on to the Secretary of League and people like that. There's 52 soccer clubs in County Wexford, so they will each get 10 as well going forward. I post off a couple of books to each of the prisons, James. I think there's 12 prisons in Ireland.
Yeah.
Addiction centres. I think I post off to 40 of them. I can't remember how many addiction centres are in Ireland. But James, not one of them got back to me and said, I was hurt over that, you know. I just thought they might have texted me and said, you know, Mary, we...
An acknowledgement would be nice.
Not one, James. I couldn't believe it. I said, when I go on the radio now the next time, I'm going to... I've all them wrote down in my book. Not one of you. Actually, there was one. There was a... I think there's a Cunmer in Carlow. Is there? Is there a place in Carlow?
Francis Fell.
They could have been the one that acknowledged it, and they
wouldn't
would
that take be ironic,
it. I must look up. But I was very disappointed, lads, that not one of them acknowledged. And, you know, and I even said, look, if you ever want me to maybe, you know, do a little talk, or if there's any of maybe the support groups that would like some books.
And do you know what? You know? That talk and a treatment center would be vital for people in addiction to listen to a mother's story.
Yeah, I would love to do it. You see, lads, there was only me. I was just doing, you know I had some of the counsellors, but at the end of the day, it was just myself. It was just me. I was doing all the running around. See my head?
Mm.
I think I suffer from ADHD. My son always said to me, Mam, you definitely suffers from ADHD. I said, now, Pat, back when I was a child, you know, no one ever heard of that. We were just sort of...
Chip around the end, get on with it.
Yeah. So he, you should go to the doctor. I said, I'm not going to no doctor. I am the way I am now, and this is the way I am. But when I'm doing anything with my book, lads, I'm so
passionate.
Oh, I swear, lads, nothing else matters to me. I have to get my book here now. Jeez, did I? But I find lately now that it some days now it's tough.
Because are you on social media?
My friend put me on it there a few weeks ago, lads. She had to come down. So Mary, you may come down, put me on Facebook, put me on Instagram.
Yeah.
She put me on them. I've done little videos and I spoke about addiction and mental health. You mean you haven't even seen them?
Yeah. Do you know what you could do as well?
Yeah.
Do you know, on Facebook especially, you can set up your own like community. So there might be other mothers and fathers might join your community. It becomes like a little support group.
Yeah.
Where people message in. I think that would be great for you as well. Social media, even though me and Timmy don't like social media either.
It's
a great tool to market yourself. We don't have to pay anybody to do it for you and get yourself out there.
And what you're doing really, Mary, is you're marketing the story of a mother who lost a son.
Yeah.
And it's not for any kind of fame or anything like that. What it is really is to show other people, mothers and fathers and anybody that's after losing someone that's really close to them, that they're not on their own.
Yeah.
You know, and that there are others out there who have lost somebody just like you.
Yeah.
And it'd be great to create a network
something
between
like
you.
That.
Because there are people out there suffering really badly at the moment. Yeah. You know.
And I tell you what was great, lads. Now, when at my Martin's Mass, I got the priest to speak about the elephant in the room, which was drugs.
Yeah.
And I remember I spoke to Father Lennon, and I hadn't told anyone, like, so we were sitting there anyway, and the next minute Father Lennon starts going on about drugs. And I could see people looking at each other like that as if to say, oh, Jesus. But I said, lads, I told him to do this, which was, you know, it was brilliant. And I was at a funeral there a few months ago, and another mother lost her son, and she'd done the same thing. And now I know other mothers that would not have done it, you know. Their son just died, you know, but people would know that would have been from an overdose, you know, of drugs, like. But yeah, so I was sort of, I even said to her after, God, well done for letting the priest speak about that.
Yeah.
You know, now her son is only dead a few months. So we're planning to meet up and on, have a chat, you know.
It takes the stigma out of it when you talk about it.
Yeah, it does. Because, like, lads, like, to me, I'm very passionate about this. I mean, these young men and women, like, these are human beings. They're sons, you know, they're fathers, they're brothers. When anyone puts them down, I really do sort of try not to lose the plot with them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, don't you dare call my son a druggie or a
junkie or a fucking...
Or I'll burst
you. Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't. I don't say that.
But
I'd often kick it, you know? Yeah. You know what I mean? I get very angry.
Yeah.
I get very angry.
Because when you hear somebody saying it about somebody else, it you're hearing it projected onto you and your own family and your son as well.
Yeah.
You know, because you know...
Like, my son was a good person. He was just, you know, I suppose, now, I always knew, I suppose now I'm probably contradicting myself, but I always knew that Martin would never be strong enough to come out of, you know, addiction.
You just wanted him to have a certain quality of life.
Yeah. I always knew he was not strong enough.
You know, he liked to drink too much, like.
Not strong enough. Could not stay away from who he shouldn't have been with, you know. Couldn't, you know, even though he loved his out sport, but when he went back playing hurling, he couldn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know what I mean?
If there was, before we finish up, if there was somebody out there listening or watching this that have lost a loved one, could be a son or a daughter or a partner or whatever, and they're struggling at the moment, if any kind of words of wisdom or comfort or advice?
Well, first of all, please don't blame yourself for what's happened to your son or daughter. I know I said I partially, you know, carry a bit of the guilt maybe with me, but, you know, and I also know that it wasn't my fault. I did everything I could for Martin, you know, I really did. And for mothers or fathers who feel that, you know, maybe they couldn't handle it so much, you know, maybe that they had to leave home, you know, they had to put him out. Don't you ever feel guilty for that either.
Mm.
Because, you know, in this life, lads, we have to look after number one, which is ourselves. Because if we're not good, how can we look after other people?
Yeah.
Even though, like, there were times I wasn't good, but I still try to do that. And stay close to your family. You know, go to support groups. Speak to people, you know. Speak to someone like me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't ever be ashamed. Don't ever be ashamed of your child. Never, you know. And, you know, that's a big thing for me now.
And if people wanted to reach out to you to say hi or ask you a question, how can they do that?
How can they do that? Right. Well, I'm on Facebook.
We can put a link.
You can.
In the description of this podcast. All they do is click that.
Brilliant. Yeah. And look, as I say to anyone, even in Wexford, you know, I mean, when I do my little videos that go up on Facebook, I will always say, if anyone wants to speak to me about anything, you know, just send me a text and, you know, I'll ring you or send me your number. And, you know, just to say this before we finish, I've had two couples that have called down to me because their sons were involved owing money to a drug dealer. Now, I didn't really know these people, you know, I didn't know them well. And they called down to my home for a cup of tea and a chat. And it was great.
Yeah.
I just, like, I mean, I'm not a trained counsellor or I'd know.
But you have a non-judgmental ear for somebody like that.
Yeah,
and that's all they wanted at the time.
And I spoke to them, you know, and I said, look, if you ever want to have a chat again, just let me know. And they were so grateful. Mm. And I love doing that. And I would love to work in that area, lads, you know. But I mean, I didn't even know me leaving cert. But I just would love to do something like that.
It's never too late.
I know, that's what people tell me.
You should go off for it. Trust me, the degree I did my suit you in community work, half of it is in college and half of it is on work placement. So you're not like sitting in college lectures.
I would love
all the
that
thing.
Now, and I
it's
might
more practical based.
Look into that, James. Yeah, I would love that now.
Even a diploma or something part time.
You know what, Mary? Yeah. It actually sounds like you're already helping people.
Oh, you're doing it.
I am, I suppose.
But it'd be nice to get paid for it, you know? Lads, like you if know, you, so, as your job.
I mean, I'm actually my mum's carer. Right now, both my sisters, actually three of them, they really help me out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they're really her carers at the minute now. And I actually clean up the golf club part-time for a few extra bob.
Yeah.
But it would be lovely just to do something that I love and get a few bob for it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'd love that.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
No, though, I would love it.
But it's there for you if you really want it.
Yeah. And but I might actually like look into
football
that,
there's footballers out there doing something that they love. They're getting fucking $500,000 a week.
But even when we started the podcast or something, we were passionate about. Yeah. And then they start, after a while, it becomes your job.
Yeah.
We start bringing in, but you never know how things work
Brilliant.
Out. But come here, it was a pleasure talking to you.
And you. Mary. And remember, if you're ever looking for a woman to come on board, here I am.
The third Norrie.
The third Norrie from Wexford.
Yeah, well, I'll have to call a taxi outside in the river because there's none.
I know, there's floods in Cork.
I come up the road in a canoe.
We'll have to get someone to come down in the Coast Guard to drop us up the road.
I know, yeah.
But listen, thank you so much, Mary, for coming
down. Thank you both so much
for
having
me. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thanks.
And you're an absolutely beautiful soul and you're going to help so many people with your podcast. So thank you
very much. And
thank you.
Continue doing what you're doing. I have great admiration for both of you. I think you are just brilliant.
Thank you very much. We see everybody next week.
God bless.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.